Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Rainer's Radio, practical training for joint heirs with Christ, with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good evening, and welcome to Rainer's Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host, and we're talking about the consequences surrounding our beliefs regarding tithing and giving in the scriptures. In other words, why is what we believe about tithing and finances and giving so important? What are there consequences, and what are they? And do they matter? Does it really matter whether we call something tithing or giving? Well, yeah, because tithing, again, you don't even have to be a Christian to tithe. It's simply you figure out 10% and you give it to the church. There's no relationship involved there whatsoever. Giving, on the other hand, is all about relationship. Relationship with God, with others. This is something you are actively involved in doing. So there's a big difference. Even if you ended up giving exactly 10% to your church, exactly as if you were tithing, the mere fact that you've asked God, you checked with Him, you had a conversation, you tested what you heard, that's giving. That's not tithing. And only Christians can do that. Non-Christians cannot go to Father and ask Him what they want, what He wants them to do. They are not spirit beings. You and I are spirit. And we have that relationship and that ability and that honor and that right to bring everything, every decision, every aspect of our life to God, to our Father and our brother and our beloved to converse with. And again, because finances is such a big aspect of our life, to relegate our relationship about giving and tithing, you know, tithing is something we connect with a God thing, and to relegate that to you write a check and it's done, you're cutting God out of that aspect of your life. So the first area of consequence of why it matters is because whether it's tithing or giving, it's a matter of control. How much, when, and to whom we give of our resources, our time and our money, is often one of the ways we can gain or maintain control. We can try to control God, thinking that if we can get God to take, if we give, we can get God to take care of us. And this is a big thing. This is the standard tie or reason to tithe, is if we do our part, God will do His part. The tithe part, even part of the Old Testament, every aspect of the Old Testament proves that there's nothing we can do to deserve God doing His part. To the degree that despite being rejected and reviled, Jesus did not only His part, but our part as well. So if we're going to try to claim a legalistic aspect of tithing, and yes, it is legalistic, that if I do my part, God will do His part, that discounts grace. Grace is unconditional. And by saying tithing, that if I do my part, God will do his part. If I tithe, God will take care of me financially. Now, here's the weird thing, is when someone, anyone, starts to tithe, starts to give in any way, shape, or form, it unlocks that aspect of the world system and starts a monetary flow. So it is absolutely true that if you give, if you tithe, if you share what you have, it unlocks a return. You will receive something back. But that has nothing to do with God's honoring what you've done. It's part of the world system. It's part of what this world has created. It's like gravity. It just works. Has nothing to do with asking God. Has nothing to do with relationship with God. But when we see when we talk about tithing, we're talking about a mechanism. Trying to figure out, okay, if I do my part, God is obligated to do his part. Well, guess what? That's not the kind of relationship we want, where we think we can make God do something by our doing something. It's like, you know, a little child saying, okay, I cleaned my plate. I deserve dessert. Well, we may be trying to teach a child to finish his vegetables, but he doesn't deserve it. It's we're giving it to him, not because he deserves it, but because we have decided that if he cleans his plate of the vegetables, he's going to get dessert. The obligation is not because of entitlement. It's because of the honor of the one who made the commitment. And again, this is part of the world system. And when we think we are entitled to something that is God's, that belongs to him, we are kicking him off his throne. And we're saying we've got God in the corner and we can make him do what we want him to. Likewise, we can try to control others, thinking that if we give to a church, a ministry, or a person, we should have some say in how the money is spent, or have a say in how they live their lives. Now, if you give money, if someone's trying to raise money to take a mission trip under a certain set of circumstances, it's totally appropriate for you to expect that money to go to that mission trip and not to buy a new car, for instance. So it depends on the terms of the gift, and that's something we need to start talking about. For instance, if you're giving to a church and not knowing where it's going, and you're not asking, you really don't have, you know, if you all of a sudden found out that it's going to something you're not happy about, but you never asked, that's on you. So none of these are examples of giving, though, but of manipulating. In true giving, money or time or goods or services are given unconditionally with no strings attached. Giving is in response to the Lord telling us to do thus and so with this and that. We can enjoy it, but we can't keep track of it. We can't take ownership of the giving. We have no control over what God or others do with what we have given. if it's a true gift. Now, this is always a good indicator. If you feel like you aren't happy with the what they've done with it, if you've given something and you're not happy with what they've done with it, double check, make sure you didn't really check with God about it. If you've checked with God, you know, okay, Lord, I really feel like I want to give this person this amount of money. And then after, and he says, you feel he says yes, and you test it. Lord, is that you? He says yes, and you give him, give the money. And you find out they spend it in a way that you're not happy with. That's on you. You need to go, Lord, you know, why am I not happy? You know, I did what you told me, and I'm confident that, you know, I heard from you, and I'm giving unconditionally, but there's something in me that is not happy with the way they're behaving, what's going on. And then we come back to this is an opportunity for the Lord to heal or reveal a wound or a lie that we're believing or an expectation or history that needs to change. So it comes back on us. And that's what we want. Because we don't want to be controlled by even what we do with our money. We don't want to be controlled by how we earn it or how we spend it or how we give it. At the end of the day, we have no control over what God or others do with the money that we give. It's out of our hands. Think we have any responsibility for it is to claim ownership rights in our soul. Rights that God will often be very jealous over. Because again, money is important to God because it's important to us. One of the things we need to get into our hearts and our minds is when you've given someone money, it becomes their money. And what somebody else does with their money is none of our business. And when it bothers us, when we want to interfere with that, that again indicates something going on in us that the Lord probably wants to talk to us about. This also, we may or may not get into this later, but this also points out why it's real helpful to avoid financial entanglements that aren't cut and dry, like being, you know, borrowing money or lending money, is because that it's not clear whose money it is. When you give money to someone, it was yours, you give it, it is now theirs. It's very clear. And any issues that come up, you can ask the Lord about, and it's very clear that he'll address them with you. But if you've lent them money and they squander it, is there a residual appropriate reaction to how it's handled? So that's, I think, one of the reasons why it's not a good idea to either borrow or lend money. Because, again, there's no clarity over whose it is. In 2 Samuel 24, David is cursed by God for numbering the people of Israel. Now, he'd been king for a while, and his army was growing. And all David did was find out how many people he was king over. How many people were in Israel? Now, this may seem like a small thing to us, but by counting the people, David exerted authority over them. He placed himself as owner of the people. When the people were called to be God's people. Now, you and I, as we spend time with our money, we exert authority over something that rightfully belongs to spirit, God and our spirit. Now, God bought all of us, lock, stock, and barrel. He didn't stop at our checkbooks and say, well, okay, I'll let you retain control over your money, and you can make your own decisions. Our finances that are part of both the natural and the soulical realm here on this earth are his by purchase. And he has not given us permission to decide what to do with it. Now, there are times when he will say, you're free to do what you want with it. Either way is fine with me. But that's only after we've checked with him. Only after we have learned how to live as a spirit being. On our own, our spirit wants to count what we have. Our soul wants to count what we have and exert its own control, its own authority. Again, our soul is our mind, will, and emotions. We want to know how we're doing. We want to know what our resources are. But in your spirit, you already have all those issues resolved. So this is another one of those areas when we get too consumed with our finances. Very often it's a reflection of how much our soul is trying to maintain control. Tithing involves another area of control in our body, in the body of Christ, that of leadership over laity. Israel was warned not to make themselves a king, that they would pay for having a king. There would be consequences. Nowhere in Scripture are believers told to obey church authority over the personal word of the Lord. The Lord alone reserves the right to govern his people. And that includes over our finances. One thing to remember here is we are often told that it's not our money, it's God's. Well, we want to return to who we are talking about when we say our. It's not, solically speaking, it's not our money. Naturally speaking, it's not our money. But because we are now a born-again spirit being, everything that belongs to God belongs to us. And he will, in fact, teach us to be wise and thoughtful stewards by giving us money of our own. Not for our soul to manage or our body to manage, but for our soul and body to learn to subject to our spirit to manage. So in one sense, God owns it all. God owns us. And on the other hand, because we are in God, we own it. So the more we are melding into Spirit God, the more we are to take personal responsibility, personal ownership for the things that are going on in our life, including our finances. Now, as we learn to exercise our spiritual authority and spiritual senses and characteristics, learn how to distinguish between what our soul wants and what our spirit wants. That what your spirit desires is from the Lord. And so the conflict that we will run into is that conflict between our spirit and our soul. That which is born of spirit is spirit. And so those desires that are spiritual come from God. So the challenge is to learn to discern the distinction and test it, and then bring the soul into subjection. And in this way, we maintain the sovereignty of God in our lives, that our soul does not have the right to decide on its own what to do with finances. And yet in the spirit, we recognize that this everything that God owns, our spirit owns. The spirit, your spirit, owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Everything that exists is under your spiritual authority and belongs to your spirit. So as we start to, there's this, it's a strange dichotomy that from the soulical perspective, nothing belongs to the soul. Everything belongs to the spirit. And so there's this strange dichotomy of learning to separate the two. In the one hand, to refuse ownership, and on the other, to take responsibility. Another way finances are used to control is the whole issue of tax-exempt status. I often wonder what will happen when believers stop getting earthly credit for tax-exempted donations. What will happen when religious organizations lose their tax-exempt status? I've heard that it's good to take your donations as exemptions on your income tax because it gives you more to give. But this is backward logic. When we give, are we trying to get something back from someone? Are we gaming the system? If we are truly giving, it will be out of obedience and in response to the desire from the Spirit, regardless of whether it's taxed or not. Any strings we attach or someone else attaches for tax purposes or whatever are always some form of control. Personally, when possible, I try to give cash. What I give is strictly between me and the Lord. And I don't want to know any more than that. I enjoy the freedom and anticipation of knowing I can trust the Lord to direct his supply into the right hands at the right time. That he is taking care of me is a separate and settled issue. I don't even go there. They're not connected. They're not related. Whether I give, how much I give, anything about my finances has nothing to do with my thinking about, will God take care of me? Two totally separate issues. Now, here's, to me, an even more important consequence regarding a misunderstanding of tithing and giving. Because tithing is so heavily taught in the church, believers are not learning how to hear from the Lord in this area, or in a sense, in any area. You and I are sons of the King, which makes us all princes who have access to our inheritance now, which is the kingdom now. Now, princes aren't on the payroll of the kingdom. They don't get a paycheck. Inherited the kingdom itself and all its riches. So everything in the kingdom is at the disposal of the prince that has inherited it. Now, God recognizes our immaturity and has authorized His Holy Spirit and those ministering supernatural beings around us to teach us to rule wisely and utilize His riches in dependence upon Him. He knows what we need to learn about handling the finances of the kingdom, and He arranges the circumstances in our lives accordingly. And He does all things well. He knows what you need, and He knows what you need to learn. And He has your day-to-day circumstances lined up accordingly. But this is one of the problems many believers struggle with today. Many have more confidence in their leaders, their pastor's authority to tell them what to do, than in the Spirit's desire to guide, counsel, and direct every aspect of their lives. Again, many people, many laity, believe that more in the direction of their leaders than in the desire of God to speak to them directly. But we must learn to hear from God for ourselves, even in opposition to those in leadership, learning to resist peer pressure. As we more fully enjoy the relationship God has paid for, this becomes more of a more clear over time. Because as we experience that relationship with God, being able to hear Him, test Him, have that confidence grow that we're hearing Him clearly, finances simply becomes another area of our life that He is bringing us into oneness, unity, spirit, soul, and body, so that we will be unified with Him. And so it becomes less and less important. Because we're not being taught how to hear from the Lord for ourselves, believers are not being taught how to give. This is one of the reasons there's a stronghold of poverty in the church. And this is where we'll pick up next session, next program. Until then, drop me a line at Diana@therainersclub.org or through Blog Talk Radio. There's a contact form on the website as well at therainersclub.org. Until then, this has been Diane Thomas of Rainers Radio. Have a great night.